you know, the flying donkey and the goodbye and laying in the bed. Dude, they did a perfect job of presenting it as
the end of a pet cemetery. I don't want to bury Horowitz it too hard, but isn't that what I laid out of? You'd want to go and talk to your grandfathers and the great grandfathers and have that knowledge passed on, similar to a Superman talking to his father using the crystals in his lair there. So,
well, here's the danger. And if we want to start the debate kind of back and forth, obviously you and Sal are one side, Papanon and I, not to speak for him, are on the other. I just see, like, I see the benefit of it, but I also see how it can be manipulated and how weak the minds and the willpower, the human
fragility is our psyche ready to be able to handle that, because
you
we're
come
not
out of it.
Right. You're not like, and this is also in Ray Bradbury novels, like the Veldt, where they have these smart houses where all the walls are whatever you can imagine. And this plays into the Neuralink of Elon Musk. So what if a mother is in some lamenting thing and she can't get out of this psychosis, and now she's just surrounding herself with her dead child's presence all the time? There is a danger of people not being able to take it in a dose and get closure or escape to a reality where you're in this. I mean, it's a very dangerous and powerful mind control experiment and device. I see Dude Bud wants us to talk about the Wu-Tang flu. We're definitely going to cover that as well. There's just so much going on this week, trying to get as many topics going as we can before Tim joins us and we can just shut up and listen because he's so damn smart.
Well, the thing with the coronavirus is that very disturbing footage of them spraying buildings and spraying all these things and then claiming that it can live for 3 days after it leaves the body. So if you touch a railing, a doorknob, it will still be there for 3 days. They still haven't quite talked about what exactly it is and how exactly it came to be.
Yeah, I mean, we tried to cover with what little internet information where people are like, oh, there's 2015, 2018 patents on it. You know, Zika and all those are versions of the coronavirus too. Coronavirus is a more hierarching, overarching thing, but those were transmitted into humans. You know, that was when swine flu and all that kind of shit. So they've been working on it, but, you know, there's way bigger things at play here, because as soon as news source reported on that and said there's also a component of HIV in it, which is true, you know, that they were taken off Twitter. Now, that's a big tell when we're wrestlers looking at a work that's selling for something. And, like, that's making me go, aha, let me look there. What's going on? I also watched on Amazon a whole thing on their one-child policy where they exterminated hundreds of thousands, who knows, maybe millions of fetuses and babies. These doctors were just doing it, and they're sending them to the landfill, dude. And this artist did a whole thing where he went and photographed them in the landfill. It's a terrible piece, but it's the truth of what they set their mind to do to get their country on track so they wouldn't starve and go under. And 40 years later, they accomplished it. Now, say they got some other goddamn plan that they want to enact, but they're not willing to wait 40 years to do it. These are the same people that would fucking kill a million babies. You think they won't wipe out 500 million people if they wanted to do that? Because yeah, that shit worked, but we need something faster than that. And I wouldn't put, if you're able to do one thing, you're fucking capable of doing the other.
Let's go back in time too and remember the Jesse Ventura conspiracy theory show that never aired because it's right here in Georgia. I can go up there, and as a matter of fact, I wanted to take a drive up there. I think it's in Clarksville, Georgia, mm-hmm. where all the FEMA coffins are.
Yes.
Like 100,000 coffins by the railroad track actually exist. And FEMA camps within the country and districts actually exist, to where Adam Curry and John C. Dvorak on the No Agenda podcast joke about it all the time when someone calls from District 7 or whatever it is.
Right. That used to be Alex's thing, you know, checking in from FEMA camp area, what have you, from shift plan. Department of Defense, the U.S. military, has mass quarantine camps set up in the U.S. This is February 10th, 2020. The United States military set up mass quarantine camps in the U.S. to hoard people into the Department of Defense has confirmed that the U.S. is following in China's footsteps. Areas to quarantine those infected with coronavirus quickly became similar to concentration camps and gulags, obviously scary words, with China forcing people from their homes into mass quarantine camps. It might not be long before the police state in the U.S. comes crashing down to protect and serve the public. We saw this footage keeps leaking out. Lady kicking and screaming. They legit throw her in the back of a pickup truck with a sealed fucking metal box on it. You know, as they gab you by each ankle and you know, two other guys carrying your arms, like, this is a straight roundup. And then we heard, you know, 2,000, 3,000 dead. And then the next day, it's like the real number is 40 to 50,000. Now there's projections of 250,000. Like, so we know that the U.S. is in a cold war with China. We've been talking about this on other fronts with Space Force, but let me keep going with this. 11 military bases near major airports in the United States are setting up quarantine centers for possible coronavirus patients. Department of Defense and Department of Health and Human Services asked the Pentagon for quarantine space in case beds fill up at the coronavirus centers around the country, according to the DOD statement. Additionally, the Pentagon already agreed to house up to 1,000 people for quarantine after they returned to the U.S. from areas with the virus, the Associated Press reports. So, you know, those crazy conspirators at the Associated Press. If you're traveling, a face mask is recommended, and is that good hand washing techniques are the two suggested to prevent contact with the virus. No one knows how far this will go. Right now, face masks are still few and far between, but some N100 face masks are becoming available again. So, Stevie, we need to get N100 to start shilling that. Excuse me. As of this writing, there have been 40,651 official and confirmed cases of the virus, and the death toll has surpassed that of SARS at 910. The U.S. government is eventually going to use quarantining that infected as an excuse to round up people into camps, and when that happens, if you're healthy and tossed into camp with a bunch of people infected with the coronavirus, well, I probably don't need to tell you. Oh, so he's writing levity into this. You know, these FEMA plans surpass everything. I mean, we talked Agenda 21, Stevie, when it was really just you and I kind of in the beginning. And this is a subsect of that. Also off of the Bill Gates stuff that we talked about, where they were in that 201 plan. It was about health and control over that kind of stuff, man, for inoculations and whatnot. So these are the masters, the Bilderbergs, the high levels doing what they want to do and having the reason to do it.
Here's an interesting question. Do you think, because there are a lot of people that are anti-vax, that they seem to be growing a lot.
Sure, sure.
Do you think that that could be some kind of precursor that activates something like this? In theory.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you couldn't get a whole generation when they were kids through through whatever reason, right? And you want to get them another way, but I don't know, man. I can't see the far crazy conspiracy side. Obviously, are going to be like they're coming to lock us up until they do, and they don't, because there's a lot of Mexican kids right now that people were red hot about, and now no one gives a fuck about them. Where are those kids? Still in some compound center locked up. So it's not like they won't fucking do it if they have the reason to, especially if it's immigrants coming in and they want to vet them. But if you're on that plane with that same person, guess what? It ain't gonna fucking matter if you're Nancy Brown or not, and they want to ship you in there. They won't give a fuck. You can bitch and scream all you want, but when it's done once, it'll get done a little easier every time. It gets a little easier every time on them.
Why are people so like looking forward to the zombie apocalypse? I can't even say it. You never see the people, because those are the people who are going to get eaten first. I've seen some of them.
Yeah,
they ain't getting away.
No, they just go down. They're like, I wanted to be a zombie anyway. I don't have to go to work anymore. There's some interesting zombie show that my wife was watching where it's like the zombies do still interact with people and they have rights, and like they it's like they treat it like an STD, like instead of what have you.
I can't think of the name. I've seen the commercials. Is that a Netflix show?
It's, I can't remember. It might be. I mean, we boost everything, so it might be a Netflix show that she watched
it's
through.
It's just in the feed.
Yeah, it's in there. iZombie, I think it's called. Yeah, they say, Scott Summer says in the chat. Appreciate that. And Brennan says 1350 dead officially. How do you know, Briz? You've been over there counting them. I heard they're cremating people by the thousands. That's what it was. And then the doctor who was one of the first ones to stooge on this, he ends up dead. And here he is right now, the man himself, just when he thought it couldn't get any better looking in this place. Holy shit. He's back. It's,
I need to shut my video off.
God. It's Tim Alberino. Tim, can you hear us? I don't know if you can.
I'm ignoring you. I'm too cool.
Can you hear us, Tim? Check 1, 2, no? I don't know if he can, man.
I don't know if he can even see us.
Yeah. I don't think he can either. He might just not be in there yet. I'll try and hit him up.
Did he say join with computer audio? Because we can see him. And
yeah. I can see you.
His office is nice.
Yeah, he's got a nice
setup. Looks very Indiana Jones-ish. Like.
Not sure if you can.
I can hear you guys. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I got you.
You were just working us there for a minute and giving us the silent treatment.
You did the old thing at the gym with the headphones. Like, they're not on, but people are talking about you.
Yeah.
There was a window that popped up. I didn't see it. I had to click accept. So.
All good, man. Just going to say, when I couldn't get any more better looking, the whole room changes again, and I'm the ugliest girl in the room. So welcome back, man. I know you're not taking a lot of interviews, and unfortunately, two of our Horseman brothers have family engagements, so thanks a lot for joining us, Tim.
This is the first interview I've done in over a year.
Yeah, man.
I enjoyed our last talk so much, I decided I couldn't pass on a second go at it.
Excellent, man. Well, we'll triple threat tonight. It's Stevie Richards and I. Glad to have you back.
Great to be with you, gentlemen.
We were just, getting heated with the chat room, and I know, there's so much going on in the world. I figure we just kind of do a best of and get your highest opinions of things, because we always love watching your feed, and then all the work you did with Gen 6, which you're beyond now, and you've moved away from that. Yeah, you want to cut a promo on them? Anything hot? You want to go hot on them, Tim?
No.
He said we went and kicked all the Darwinist ass, and they had already smashed the giant skulls, man. That one of our favorite episodes. All the work you guys did on the Giants, man, so we appreciate that.
I was in this time last year, I was in Peru for 5 months doing all kinds of crazy things. I was down there with a team of guys, and we made some incredible discoveries, and so we can get into some of that later if you want to.
Absolutely, I want to get into that, man. This guy's the real life Indiana Jones. If you guys didn't listen to our first gimmick here, I mean, look at him, man. Like, he's right out of Central Casting, and he's down in the jungles. He's in Sardinia. He's doing the interviews. He's tracking down mythic cryptids of all types, I'm sure, beyond the Giants, and also has all the up-to-date views on that we have, or we try and keep up on how we're being duped by the deep state and everything else, man. So we were just talking obviously you've heard of the coronavirus.
I've been tracking that. Yeah.
And everything from it being patented, from there being an HIV component in it, and then to watch the media blackout of those who tried to cover it first as independent journalists is a big tell for us. And then these, online death tolls that are 30 to 50,000 to a quarter million, then official numbers and news stories are 1,300. And I was discussing, these are the same people who did a one-child policy and murdered millions of their own fetuses and put them in, huge dump sites. And wouldn't they to accomplish something else? If you can do that, you can wipe out 500 million of your own people to accomplish whatever goal you want in a quicker turnaround than 40 years.
Do you want my analysis on the coronavirus?
Absolutely.
Well, the first thing that we need to understand is in all of the media storm that's been going on about the coronavirus, you have, of course, the alternative media reporting a much more dire situation than the conventional media, mainstream media, which is pretty much parroting what the Chinese Communist Party is providing us with in terms of information concerning the virus, and also what the WHO is providing us with, the World Health Organization. I've read a lot of material. I've done a lot of research, as much as I possibly can, on this subject. And I think we need to be careful on both ends of the spectrum. You have this spectrum of information out there that's promulgating on Twitter, promulgating on the social media platforms. So you have this way over here on this side, you have this extreme end of the world scenario where people are predicting apocalyptic millions and millions of deaths in an apocalyptic scenario in which the governments of the world and the economies of the world stop functioning and it's anarchy and so forth. That's way over here on this end of the spectrum, on the bad end of the spectrum. And then on the more innocuous end of the spectrum, you have the Chinese government that is giving us these official numbers. It's over 1,000 dead at this point and 40 some thousand infected. And that's pretty much what the mainstream media has been presenting, although they have been, they're not doing as bad of a job as I think a lot of people are saying, because they are making it known that these numbers are should be doubted because they're coming from the Chinese Communist Party. So everybody's aware that you can probably add a zero to whatever number right. the Chinese are giving us. And on this end of the spectrum, it's a disaster for China. It's a calamity for the Chinese people, but not necessarily for the world. So you have these two ends of the spectrum. And I think that for me, very clearly, the truth of what's actually occurring is somewhere in the middle. I don't think we're in the kind of an apocalyptic scenario that a lot of people are predicting, prognosticating. And I don't think it's what the Chinese Communist Party says either.
Yeah.
There's a number of things that people, I think, forget or perhaps don't know related to this virus that you have to factor in. If you don't factor this information in, then you are going to come out with this very bleak apocalyptic prognosis. I don't think many people are aware of the fact that these cities, Wuhan and these other cities in China, have some of the most polluted air on planet Earth. There's a lot of pulmonary problems in China just due to the pollution in the air. Added to that, compounding that situation, I don't think many people realize that 68%, almost 70% of Chinese males smoke cigarettes, are chain smokers. I mean, that's an astronomical number. Yeah.
More than half. You love that viral video of chain smoking fat Chinese baby. That's one of the best ones.
And more than half of Chinese men are smoking cigarettes.
Yeah.
So combine those two things together, without adding in this virus that causes pneumonia.
Yeah.
And then on top of all of that, the coronavirus, it appears, and it looks like the preliminary data is pointing to this. I haven't seen anybody dispute this claim yet. Could be false, but I haven't seen anybody dispute it yet. It appears that Asians are more susceptible. They're prone to this virus. They're predisposed to this virus, Asian males, because apparently they have five times the amount of the kind of cells in their lungs that this virus attaches itself to.
Hmm.
So that's a really dire scenario for the Chinese.
Yeah, if you're predisposed
to pollution in the air, they've got a smoking problem, so their lungs are already shot, and they're genetically predisposed to this virus. And that is why we're seeing the kind of reaction in China, these draconian measures that they're taking. It's devastating the Chinese. But outside of China, I think there's only two deaths at this point,
yeah. Yeah.
with hundreds of cases. And we've got a couple of cruise ships. One of them sitting off the coast of Japan, that are basically those are clinics right now for this virus. Scientists are watching those. Virologists are watching those vessels very closely, because we're going to get real numbers out of those cruise ships. Regardless of what's going on in China, those cruise ships are going to tell us exactly how bad this virus is.
That's your living Petri dish with your real analytics in real time.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah. And you've got a mix of people on those ships. You've got Europeans, you've got Americans, you've got Asians, you've got a mix of genomes on that ship. And so we're really going to see what exactly how deadly this virus is. We already know that it is extremely contagious. There's nobody disputes that fact. Nobody. The mainstream media, the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, nobody disputes the fact that this virus is exceedingly contagious. So I think what we're dealing with is we're dealing with an extremely contagious virus that's not extremely deadly. It's deadly, especially if you have pre-existing conditions or if you're elderly, and especially if you happen to be a Chinese, an Asian male who smokes a lot living in a polluted city. Mm. I think the death rate in that scenario, let's say in Wuhan, is going to be much higher. The fatality rate inside of Wuhan. So we cannot base our prognostications off of what's occurring in Wuhan. I think that's the number one thing. People need to step back. Do not base your prognostication off of what's happening in Wuhan. You're going to get this apocalyptic, dreadful scenario. And I don't think that reflects reality. Those cruise ships reflect reality. And also, we've had 13 cases of the coronavirus in the United States so far up until today. Now, those are the cases that have been confirmed. Not a single one of those people have died. In fact, I read today, every single one of those people who are infected with the coronavirus, all of those Americans, some of whom are no doubt Asians, probably the majority of whom are Asians, had a mild case of the virus. And nobody has died of this virus except for, as I said, two people outside of China, and they were Asians. I think one in Hong Kong and one in the Philippines. So we know that thousands of people from Wuhan and from specifically from Wuhan traveled out of the country before this virus hit the news in the way it is is now.
I mean,
so my question.
Go ahead.
So you got to wonder right now, okay, if this virus is this contagious, and it is. We know it's that contagious already. We know that this is extremely contagious. Why are we not already seeing the emergency rooms in the United States and Europe and different parts of Africa and different parts of Asia? Why are they not being flooded with people not being able to breathe, especially the elderly?
Yeah.
So something's off here. It can't be as apocalyptic as people are predicting. And then also remember that we are in an election season.
Exactly.
And you've got a few people right now that are campaigning. You've got Klobuchek, or whatever her name is. You have Sanders, and you have Elizabeth Warren. Those are senators. They were briefed on the coronavirus. All three of them were briefed on the coronavirus during the impeachment in the Senate. They were briefed. They got very good information, better information than you and I are going to get about this coronavirus. Now, you tell me a situation that is more conducive to catching a virus than campaigning as a politician, shaking hands all day long, being in public environments.
If you wanted to infect Joe Biden, you would just get a 12-year-old girl with the coronavirus, and he will go up and get
exactly.
Stevie, what do you think about I mean, obviously we've been through Zika, we've been through Ebola. This further proves that I can beat anybody.
We haven't been through it. I've never had it. Have you?
No.
You've been through it?
I'm just saying, I mean, as a society, and this further proves that I can beat anybody in Japan now that we know they have weak lungs and they're smokers.
China, not Japan.
There's still Asians, and I can already beat everyone in Japan. So I'm just moving on to bigger territory now.
Don't try to argue with them about this, Tim. but what I think, though, is
the fear porn, you know.
This is kind of how people like Tim had said in the beginning, that you're either getting the super low numbers that are being covered up, or you're getting the apocalyptic numbers, mm-hmm. which I think causes what we call the Nancy Browns, the casual people that watch the news, to shut off from it, to just blind themselves to the entire thing. I think the more telling thing is that the numbers for just people that die from the regular flu every year, you're talking about the elderly, you're talking about how you contract pneumonia, your immune system is not strong enough, all these factors. And then you talk about the people that die every year from flu shots. These numbers would scare people probably a lot more than the 13 people that contracted the coronavirus and did not die from it. So it's pretty weird how we're able to be scared of this coronavirus, but not scared of the things that actually pretty much do occur every day within our walls.
I think the fear around this virus for people who've been watching the news, and not just the mainstream news, but the alternative media, is the notion that it is a biological weapon. And I lean in that direction, definitely. From day one, when I began to track this thing, as everybody else was, it had, for me, it had the hallmarks of a biological weapon. And I think that when you look at all the data and you compare what people are saying across the spectrum, it's becoming evident that the narrative that this came from, you know, that this jumped over from a species of bat or armadillo or something like that is unlikely. You know, you have that level four biolab there in Wuhan, and this virus seems to be, unfortunately,
we have that. We have this designed. The Harvard professor that's connected to that lab in Wuhan, where he was funneling $50,000 a month to these secret labs to get that lab set up via Harvard, exactly. Where they bring him in to be like, you know, so every asshole who sends their kid to Harvard can say, I'm learning from a top, you know, bioengineer from China, and they can ooh and ah about it. But the reality is it's a total espionage job to funnel money back and start this shit up black market style.
Exactly.
Just follow up a question on this, Tim, and you could follow your bioweapon theory. It's kind of strange how nobody's talking about the protest now in Hong Kong.
Yeah, that was, I was going to say, the other thing to shut it down. You want to fucking get them off the streets and start spraying?
Well, I can't remember who said it, but somebody once said that you never let a good crisis go to waste. So I don't
Rahm
think that
Emanuel.
Rahm Emanuel. I don't think that the Chinese manufactured this crisis, but they're certainly not going to let it go to waste. They are, I guarantee you. I mean, we're talking about
the Chinese are masters at manufacturing. That's what they do. That's all they know how to do is manufacture.
They're certainly going to use this as an opportunity to get rid of some of their political enemies. We're talking about the Chinese Communist Party. This is a very aggressive political regime. They've been aggressively persecuting Christians and Muslims and all kinds of different religious people in China, and certainly people who have different political views are without a virus, even in the scenario, are already persecuted in communist China. So you put the virus into that scenario, and they're forcibly quarantining people. They're going into these quarantine centers, you know, alive and well, and coming out the back in body bags and being burned. So this is a very convenient moment in time to get for China, for the Communist Party, to get rid of its political enemies. And those, it's certainly shut down the protests in Hong Kong. However, this is not going to be beneficial to the communist regime in China, because the Chinese people are already really pissed at the government. They feel like the government has mismanaged this situation already. They feel they don't like the strong arm tactics that the police are using and that the army is using. Everybody in China is very upset, very distraught over the death of that whistleblower, the young guy that died, the doctor. I think we may be looking at the beginning of the end of the Communist Party in China, at least this particular regime.
The social media score shit is out of control. We watched the guy from the one thing on his WhatsApp where he had commented he was stopped and it was some registration thing on his way home on his car. He commented to his friends privately there was some bullshit. They went and got him, tied him into like a cage, like he was sitting in a tub with roll cages on it,
And he had to say, "I'm sorry, uncle," to like these three different cops that like on a little board right there to like to humble himself so he wouldn't go to prison, man. Like some strange shit.
People don't realize how oppressive this regime is. It is exceedingly oppressive.
Yeah.
And I do not believe that the Chinese manufactured this, what I believe to be a biological weapon. There's no proof of that yet. I think that though a reasonable analysis of the facts, would cause a person to lean towards the biological weapon analysis and conclusion. But you know, what's really interesting is the person who's the best briefed on this right now in the United States is President Trump. At least one of the people who's most accurately briefed on this situation.
I'm sure everything's going to go perfectly fine with that. I mean,
but look at President Trump. He's got a meeting. He's going to India soon. He didn't cancel that trip. And he's also out campaigning. The president of the United States is mingling with tens of thousands of people right now. He's campaigning. He's shaking hands. He's taking pictures. Okay. That guy's being briefed every single day on the coronavirus outbreak. But at the same time, you have in the United States, you have the Department of Defense, basically the Pentagon overseeing the quarantine operation that's happening here. So these people with coronavirus are being quarantined on military bases. On military bases, not in hospitals, on military bases. So yeah. So I think we have, like I said, I think we're somewhere in the middle here. This is not the apocalyptic scenario that a lot of people are pushing. And by the way, a lot of those people are making millions of dollars right now selling food and gold.
Masks and all that. That's what, before exactly. You came out, we were like, what can we hustle? What can we hustle?
Exactly. So, but on this end of the spectrum, it's not what the Chinese are telling us either, what the government's telling us either. We need to be very careful, be very sensible about this. And the fact that the Department of Defense is operating the quarantine, I think is a clear indication that this is a biological weapon. This is a national security issue. Mm-hmm. It's not just a CDC health issue. It's a national security threat. And that's why the military is handling it. So, yes, it's a biological weapon in my estimation. I think they probably stole it from either us or the Canadians. And, you know, they dropped the vial or something. And they screwed themselves. I don't think they manufactured this on their own. I think they're trying to develop an antibody to it, or maybe weaponize it themselves. And now they unleashed it on their own populace. They're using it. They're using the crisis to their advantage to get rid of political dissidents. However, I think that when the smoke clears, probably in about 6 months from now, I think that the Chinese people are going to rise up against this particular regime. Mm. I really do. I think that those protests that we saw happening in Hong Kong are now going to become commonplace all over China. The Chinese people are very upset right now at their government.
Let's hope they get their cardio up from all that smoking, Stevie, so they can protest a little bit longer. And we were talking before you came on, Tim, because we've had this going on, you know, as the believers and the atheists and the believers in our group, as we try and be open to all thoughts and points of view. But, you know, this mortal coil to shed it, we were talking about Elon Musk and Neuralink that he's promising to be implanted in, you know, within this year. And also we talked about this VR experience of a mother meeting her deceased daughter in South Korea using that technology, and how fragile the human psyche is, and that's really not letting go or being able to move on or move past it. But here we are now talking about living in these worlds that are more virtual for this, but then also, I know Kung Fu. You know, the Keanu Reeves Matrix upload to our heads. Stevie, you want to go in on it? Go for it, man.
Well, I can see the benefit. But as a believer and as somebody who has a perspective, basically the lines are kind of split. It's usually Sal and Ben, and then popping on to myself, Tim, and have spirited debates and still love each other in the end. And that's the whole thing about disagreeing, with respect, you know, to other people's opinions. I just watched that VR thing with the woman and her deceased child, which played out and tugged at my heart, and the emotion and just being able, it just speaks for itself. Anybody that's listening or watching, you have to go watch it for yourself. But I can also, I pictured the movie Inception. I pictured other things of people that wouldn't want to ever come back from that virtual reality, from that world, and how somebody can manipulate that and use it for evil purposes as well. What they would use it for, I'm not quite sure, but there's always good intentions and good benefits that get turned and militarized into something for more nefarious reasons.
Yeah, I think that, I think it's it, right now the, we're on the cusp, and I've been saying this for the last couple of years, but it's true, and it's going to be true for the next decade. We're on the cusp of an entirely new era. And this virus, I think, is an indication that that is in fact true. An era of the genetic revolution is going to happen with the genetic modification. We're talking about personal enhancement. It's going to start in with developing genomic medicine that's going to be replacing defective genes and repairing defective genes and so forth. But I think it's going to move into full-scale genetic modification enhancement, and that's going to cross over into cybernetics. That's going to cross over into virtual reality scenarios. That's going to cross over into nanotechnology. This is the age that we're in right now, and it's not going to stop. You cannot stop it. You cannot stop the progress, this kind of progress. It's called the technological imperative. Once we discover technology that is useful to us, that is beneficial to us, either commercially or, more importantly, militarily, the development of that technology is inevitable, absolutely inevitable, no matter what. You can put restrictions on it, you can try and slow it down, but it will be inevitably developed. And, you know, the best example of that is the atomic bomb. You know, this is, the atomic bomb is a weapon with which we could literally destroy the human species on planet Earth. We could destroy the Earth. The United States military and the Russian military had enough atomic weapons during the Cold War to destroy the Earth many times over, absolutely eradicate life on this planet. And that's a technology. We knew what the potential was of the atomic bomb. You know, as soon as we developed it and dropped it in the desert southwest of the United States, but yet we continued to perfect it, and so did the Russians, and to make it even more powerful. And this is a weapon that, if it, in the wrong hands, that's the kind of scenario that, you know, you're talking about an apocalypse. Mm-hmm. And yet we've got thermonuclear missiles all over the Earth, positioned and pointing at different nations. The Russians are pointing them at us. We're pointing them at the Russians. And, you know, the Chinese certainly have
Russian subs right off the coast of North Carolina as recently as last week. Like the Atlantic coast, not as secure as it once was at that time.
Exactly. And you know, this is the reason why, by the way, to sort of finish my thought, the development of technology is inevitable, even if it has the capacity to eliminate the human species off the face of the Earth. It is inevitable. And that applies to all kinds of technologies. But, you know, thinking about this, the atomic age that we just came out of, and we've got these thermonuclear weapons, that actually gives us that's the catalyst, and certainly has been the catalyst for nations to develop other kinds of weapons.
Sure.
Biological weapons that can be deployed without killing everybody, without eliminating the whole species. And so the development of thermonuclear weapons in some way catalyzed the development of biological weapons. And so all of these technologies are just going to inevitably progress. So they're unstoppable. The development of technology is unstoppable. And if we wipe ourselves out with atomic weapons or with biological agents, humanity will start over with sticks and stones and build up to the point where they could do it again.
But will you, would you,
Tim Alberino, get the Neuralink to be able to upload all the information that you'd like to be able to have, or the transhumanism of shedding.
Listen, we don't need this guy to be any smarter, more handsome, or speak better than us. Let's not get too far.
I was trying to set it up for us three to have a kid together, use all of our genes together, have the perfect facial hair, Indiana Jones style. And blue eyes, Stevie, and you screwed it all up. But no,
the baby.
That's right. That's right.
If you're you know, plugged into the, let's say, the matrix of the future, and you're downloading the ability to be a top-notch martial artist, what else are you inadvertently downloading? I mean, if you can acquire abilities,
what kind of virus could you get then? That's the kind of virus, your Windows virus. Yeah.
Now you're talking about the same kind of viruses that infect computer systems can also start to be integrated into these future technologies and really screw with your brain, or even, you know, drive you to madness. Who knows? It's certainly the future. It's coming, and the short answer to that question again is, no, I wouldn't. I wouldn't put anything into my. I don't even like the idea of virtual reality, because people are already so detached from reality as it is. Virtual reality, I mean, look at social media to some extent is virtual reality. People are living virtual lives. It means more to people how many likes they get on Facebook than going out and actually doing something in the world that gives them satisfaction. You know, that's a mental disorder is what that is.
Sure.
It's a mental disorder. And it's a mental disorder that's been caused through the technology of social media. And it's having massive ramifications in the millennials and the generations behind us. Massive ramifications. We're just now beginning to understand the consequences. And, you know, the suicide rate is through the roof now. And people are committing suicide because other people are saying mean things about them on social media. This is happening routinely. So when you get into the next level social media environment, which will be virtual reality, imagine that. Not only will you be liking people's posts, posting things yourselves, and taking pictures of yourself on Instagram, you'll actually be able to enter a virtual world with an avatar, a virtual avatar. I don't see anything good about that. I mean, that's I think it's going to turn the human brain to mush in the future.
Well, I mean,
yeah, I was going to say,
this is how we make our whole brand, is insulting people in a virtual realm, Tim. You just described my business model. No, go ahead, Stevie.
I was going to say very quickly that as somebody throughout high, I don't know if Tim's old enough, but Ben, you know, we're old enough to remember when you were bullied in high school in person, you could come home and escape that. I can't even imagine or fathom having that 24 hours a day from the time I go to bed to the time I wake up, and then all throughout the day, even if I don't see the bully or the crowd, that the cool crowd that hangs on the steps, this part of the high school, they're virtually hitting me and there's some kind of thing within the human psyche that just keeps seeking it out. All you have to do is not check. All you got to do is just put it down. But people can't seem to do that today. And I just fear for children and children's children to come of that, because it's terrifying.
Yeah, I won't let my kids have cell phones. They don't have Facebook accounts. They don't have cell phones. You know, I interact with their friends sometimes, and, you know, my boys are on football teams and stuff. And I'm even noticing how much trouble a lot of these young people are having in just expressing themselves in the English language. Oh, yeah. The social skills are deteriorating, and it's a frightening scenario, because, you know, the things that make us, we're gradually losing the things that make us human. We're gradually losing our humanity. We're trading our humanity for convenience and for satisfaction and gratification, social gratification on social media. You're trading your humanity, a little bit of your humanity, rather than getting together with friends or neighbors and having a cup of coffee and talking face to face with people, interacting. That's old fashioned at this point. People would much rather engage with each other through social media and texting and so forth, which there's certainly a convenience there, and I think it has its place. But I think that, you know, that's the future. And that's not a very exciting future. It's not really a future that I have any desire to be a part of.
Well, it does. I mean, you're out there living in the world as opposed to this digital piece. And you've been, like you told us before, you're like, you know, when you drove that Jeep off the cliff to get away from the Peruvian drug lords while they crashed into the alligator pit and were ripped apart and they're all dead now, and you were able to provide clean water back to the village, and, you know, everyone thanked you before you came back home again and chopped your way out of the jungle. I mean, what else was going on down there with you in Peru while you were hanging out?
It didn't happen because he never posted on Facebook.
Yeah, it didn't happen. I didn't see it on Instagram with a Dan Balzerian bikini model.
I can't even remember that happening, so I should have posted that on Facebook.
But yeah, man, give us the update on what has been going on with your research and what of your pet projects, because we're super interested.
Well, as I said, I was in Peru for 5 months last year. And we were doing all kinds of things. I was working initially on a film project, but we were doing some expeditionary type work. I led an expedition up into the Andes Mountains, and we made a pretty incredible discovery. We discovered the ruins of a lost city. Wow. In the Andes, we unofficially discovered this city. In other words, the locals knew about it, but nobody else really does to this day. The locals call it Tauripunku, and nobody looking that up online is going to find any information on it because nobody knows about it outside of this very obscure community up in the Andes. So we went up there, and I was up there a couple years ago, and I was there with Anselm P. Rambla, the Spanish explorer Anselm P. Rambla, and then I went back again with another team this past year. But this time I went back with LIDAR technology because I wanted to get an idea of the scope of the ruins up there. And LIDAR technology, for those of you who don't know, it kind of peels away all of the foliage so that you see only the topography of the terrain and whatever's on the terrain. In other words,
it can go down about 30 feet into the ground, 34. Well, even, I think it can go farther than that, actually. But
well, LIDAR technology, the main purpose of that is it's laser technology. Yeah. And it penetrates through beyond the foliage. So if you've got a heavily wooded area, forested area with ruins underneath, you can fly LIDAR over and peel away the foliage and the vegetation to see the actual constructions of stone and brick or whatever.
Well, just a side note, I was looking actually to buy, like I was saying, how can I get my hands on one around here? My parents' house, they dug up to put in a new barn garage, and back in the 1800s it was a funeral home, and they found old marble tombstones from soldiers and whatnot that were there underneath. So I wanted to like have them do my family's whole property to see, who knows if there's a bunch of 1860s tombstones underneath there. So I have a weird need for a LIDAR guy. If you can,
were you looking for LIDAR or were you looking for ground penetrating radar?
I just saw it on a show that Stevie hates, Curse of Oak Island, that they were using LIDAR and that's what they called it. So that was
Almost went on that show with our ground penetrating radar unit. That's another story, though.
I want to watch that.
now he's interested. But sorry, man. Go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
We have a state of the art. My team has a state of the art. I think it's only the third in the world ground penetrating radar drone.
Okay, that's what I say. You're probably flying over.
Yeah, and we brought that to Peru. Nobody has ever deployed that kind of technology in Peru.
Hmm.
And you know, Peru's probably the place, if there's one place on Earth where you can find a lot of stuff to this day, ancient ruins and artifacts, it's Peru. I mean, it's just loaded with stuff that comes from the Incan civilization and then the pre-Incan civilizations going way back, thousands of years back. So we went there with a ground-penetrating radar drone. And it's state-of-the-art technology. They used it to find... Recently, they used this model to find a ship under the ice. I think it was in Iceland. I can't remember if it was Iceland, Greenland, or somewhere up there near the North Pole. They found a ship under the ice. It was hundreds of feet under the ice with this thing. So we had that technology in Peru. I didn't bring the ground-penetrating radar up on the mountain. I brought a LIDAR team from the United States instead because the problem up there was the foliage, and we wanted to be able to see the scope of the ruins. Turns out that we went up there, you know, with donkeys and stuff, and hiked up the mountain. And the LIDAR equipment, the team, the LIDAR guys, ran into an unusual situation in that their drones were just dropping out of the sky. They brought three drones, very expensive drones, with the LIDAR connected to them. And for some reason, those drones, there's some kind of, almost like there was a, we never verified this, but it was almost like there was some kind of a magnetic interference or something up there that was, these drones weren't able to fly. And they were just falling out of the sky. I mean, we'd literally be hacking through the woods trying to get to some ruins and look up and watch our expensive drone that we carried up this mountain just plummet out of the sky and crash into the trees.
Stevie, do you love it? Stevie, do you love that feeling of when a drone comes crashing down out of the sky and you have to run for it?
Is the drone a real American? A little wrestling joke.
Yeah, no. Stevie's our resident drone expert. So,
but it was
not really. I currently don't own one, so I can tell you how good I am at flying.
The data we were able to get back from the LIDAR was impressive. That area up there, those ruins are extensive. And what's really exciting is I think that I have to do some more research on this and maybe go back. Don't know that I really want to go back for several reasons, but I'd have to go back and do some more research to determine if this lost city up in the Andes, central Andes, is related to Machu Picchu. I think it is. Okay. In fact, I think it's aligned with Machu Picchu. And it's very Machu Picchu-esque when you're standing up on the mountain looking down over the ruins. The configuration of the mountains and so forth is very similar to Machu Picchu. So if it is related to Machu Picchu, it's a very significant find. I haven't published the data yet. I haven't publicly disclosed the find yet because we're still working on developing a TV show or a documentary series or something, and I don't want to jump the gun. So we're kind of just holding on to it for now. But it could be very significant. That we ran into all kind of interesting problems in the course of that expedition. One of the main problems we had was we were stuck down in the town in the jungle. This is an area of the Andes where you literally go from Amazon jungle to a totally different kind of terrain in the Andes within a half an hour. You know, driving on roads, very, very dangerous roads. So you climb up out of the Amazon into the Andes. You go from tropical weather to cold, dry Andean mountain climate. Rocky, yep. So it's a very unique area. And there's all of the central Andes are like that to some extent. But we were stuck down in the village in the jungle because there's two villages on either side of this mountain. And pretty much only these two villages know about the ruins. And these villages have been feuding for generations and have been engaged in machete wars. And because we were there the first time working with the village on this side of the mountain, the village on the other side of the mountain, when they caught wind of the fact that we were coming back, they wanted us to work with them this time. And there was this, you know, we were nervous about getting into a machete war. And that's actually what it looked like for a while, that was going to happen. And they blocked the road. The one village blocked the road. They didn't want us to come up unless we promised to help them in various ways. And we did end up building a medical outpost up there for them.
I knew he was going to do some A-team shit. You knew he had to do some shit like that, right? Stevie, you ever worked that CZW pay-per-view Machete Wars?
No, this one sounds like it would draw a lot more than that one.
Draw a lot.
I just want to know who flipped the Jeep and how they exploded in there.
We didn't flip a Jeep. However, we did crash a buggy on the side of that mountain. So it wasn't a Jeep; it was a buggy. The buggy actually, we bought this buggy. It was an awesome Arctic Fox. It was like a buggy that's equipped for really rugged desert terrain.
Yeah,
we were in the desert at first. Sure. Mm-hmm. In fact, we were in the desert looking for lost treasure in the beginning. Going up into the Andes to look for this to explore this lost city because the mafia we got into some problems with the Peruvian mafia in the desert. So we ended up switching gears and going up in the mountains. And we took the buggy with us because those roads are super dangerous. I mean, you know, 1,000 people a year die on those roads up there. They're dangerous. And, you know, sometimes your wheel is 6 inches off of the road and hanging off of the road. And it's just a sheer drop hundreds of feet. I don't like it up there on those roads, but so I decided this time I'm going to take a buggy up there because screw going up there in a truck. And you know, everything was going great. We're flying up the mountain in this buggy, and then, you know, it got on an incline, and the cables in the transmission just snapped on me. And so we had this buggy broken down on the side of a mountain, you know, in this obscure area in Peru. And so I ended up having to get in a truck and going up the mountain anyway. But so, yeah, we didn't flip a Jeep, but we definitely did destroy a buggy on the side of that mountain.
That's sketchy stuff all the time, man. When you're – go ahead.
No, I wanted to have a question because, you know, you're talking about all these kind of like wild things that are happening that are very unpredictable. In the middle of the machete war, these battling villages, the Peruvian mafia – how much time did it take to prep before you were taking this excursion? And then how much of that was like, holy shit, we didn't prepare for that. Like what percentage turned out to be like, we got to call an audible and figure this out as we go along.
That what you just said describes pretty much the whole experience. I had to manage every day a new problem, every single day, a new problem. And I was running logistics. I was running the whole thing. And putting the expeditions together, and I had to manage a team of 20 people. We had 20 people on this team, and so every day it was some weird thing happening. And so sometimes we had the team divided in different parts of Peru, trying to manage that whole scenario. A partner of mine, a guy by the name of Gary Haven, who's a multi-billionaire, really, really adventurous guy. You talk about a guy that's straight out of Central Casting.
Yeah.
It's Gary Haven. He's a cigar smoking billionaire, super adventurous dude. And he's really fearless, and he's a pilot. And so he was flying us around in Peru in his airplane, you know? So we were supposed to have this cargo plane. That's Gary's cargo plane. And, you know, we were going to be able to load up all our dirt bikes on it and our buggy and fly all over Peru in this thing. And it broke down in Peru, the airplane, the wheels wouldn't retract. It was a mess. It was broke down several times actually. So all of my logistics were screwed because all of my logistics for 20 people and all the gear was based on this cargo plane.
What he's not telling you, it was at 20,000 feet where the back of the plane opened up. They had to parachute out the back 20 people.
No, that would have been fun.
Oh.
It wasn't fun. What happened?
Our Air Force One later in the story.
Yeah, no, that would have been fun. It wasn't that kind of exciting scenarios. It was very
frustrating. What the fuck?
Trying to figure out where, you know, hotels and stuff for people.
Right,
and
right.
And transportation. And how do you move a group of 20 guys with just a couple of days' notice from one side of the country to the other side of the country with all their equipment? And then you got security issues and... You know, we started off in the desert looking for treasure, and
we got pitched.
Why we went down there initially.
We got pitched the Anunnaki gold thing from our producers too. We just didn't bite on it.
Which wasn't Anunnaki gold. This was Inca gold.
All right. I was gonna say one thing that stuck out to me that I didn't want to go by when you were talking about your drone. You saw there might have been some magnetic interference. And obviously, if this is related to Machu Picchu, I'm sure this is well within your research about, is it lining up with the ley lines or the numbers lining up, you know, cosmically with anything along those lines as you look at star maps and compared to your new find?
It appears that way. Yes.
Okay. Okay.
But, you know, I mean, we've done some preliminary work on it. I got distracted with other things, but it looks that way. It looks like this, you know, Machu Picchu's on this side of the Andes. Here, you know, here's the Andes Mountains, the backbone of the Andes Mountains. Mm-hmm. Machu Picchu's here, and on this side of the Andes, and Taripunku's here on this side of the end, the other side of the Andes. And so they seem to be aligned, and there's a cosmological alignment also there that's very interesting. But you know, that's I haven't even reopened those files and pulled the maps up for a year, because right. that trip kicked my butt, and I've been doing other things since I got back. Honestly, I can tell you this, you know, it's only by the grace of God that nobody got injured or died on that trip, because we had some very close calls, some very touch and go scenarios. We had to get security. Again, we had our issues with potential threats from the mafia, Peruvian mafia, all kinds of very tense situations that we found ourselves in. And we kind of had to always be pivoting around, working around these problems, planes breaking down, vehicles breaking down, credible threats coming from the mafia, constantly getting stopped by the police.
What are the mob? The mob and the police just want their tax. They got their hand
out. Well, you know, it's funny because you'd have to drive on the Panamericana. And anybody listening to this that has any plans of driving in Peru on the Panamericana, which is the main highway running, actually runs on the old Incan Trail, the main road along the coast. It's the highway follows the Incan Road, what's called the Royal Road, the Camino Real, and the highway there. It goes all the way, stretches all the way down the side of the coast of South America. And at least in the Peruvian section of it, it's comical. It's actually comical. You've got these Peruvian highway patrolmen. And, you know, the chances that they're going to stop you, pull you over to try and extract a bribe from you are about 60 to 70%, I'd say. Especially if they see that you're a gringo.
Sure.
And so you run into scenarios in which you have to be able to talk your way out of these situations, which we probably had seven of those at least that I was involved in personally. Mm-hmm. But our whole team, you know, probably had over a dozen of those kind of experiences. And the funny thing is that you're once you get stopped the first few times, you're running into the same cops.
I think. Oh yeah. So you pay them off multiple times.
And it's comical because it's like it's the same. You start to understand how they play the game over there, and so you've got these one police officers in particular is a really fat guy and then a real skinny guy, and one was good cop and the other was bad cop. So one would threaten you with "We're going to impound your car and you're going to go to prison," and you know. They can plant drugs and, you know, a little bit of cocaine in the back of your car or whatever. And then the skinny little guy was the good cop who'd back him off and say, no, we don't need to get into that kind of a scenario. You know, the police officers here in Peru, we really just lack funds. And then you go down that road with them and you get into this bribe scenario. And after a while, it just became entertaining. It was comical because you'd see the same dudes. And once I got stopped a couple of times and I stopped playing their game, the third time they stopped me, the same guys, you know, I saw them here, they are pulling up next to me and I just shaking my head, pull me over, walks up to me the one time. I don't know why I'm telling you a story. It's just,
that's good.
It's just comical to me. Yeah. They're walking up to me and I'm looking at him in the rear view mirror and he doesn't know it's me yet. And he sees me. And as soon as he sees me, he's shocked because now he knows he's you know, he's
they can't
he's
run. They can't run. Here. You've seen this show before, bro. You've seen this.
Exactly. He's stretching his luck now. So he comes up to the window and he stops. He sees me, goes like that. And he said, "Sir, sorry about the inconvenience. You can go on your way." So, you know, it's just stuff like that you're constantly running into in Peru.
I can solve this problem for you for whatever country you go to. There's a manager from Kentucky named Star Maker Kenny Bolin. And all he ever has to do to get a free meal or any place or get out of anything like that, he keeps a stack of John Cena 8x10s with him. And that's all you need. If you have that, fake sign them And then when they come up for something, be like, hey, dude, John Cena's my brother. And then give them the 8x10. It'll get you out of almost anything you want.
That probably, or cigars.
Cigars is what they're down for.
But, I think cigars would work better with the Peruvian boys.
I don't know. I've seen them cashing a lot of those Cena 8x10s and fake bootleg DVDs for free meals at Golden Corral. I think
you're going to teach them how to run a meat scam in Peru next.
Yeah,
yeah. <Come on.
laughs> Yeah, man.
No, it was just, you know, I just tell you that story. Just every day was ridiculous, crazy stuff for 5 months straight. Some of it was fun. Some of it was adventurous.
Yeah, man.
A lot of it was just absolutely stressful and very touch and go.
Well, at the end of the day, what gives is the biggest thing of what we talked about, whether it's transhumanism and VR. Dude, you're out there making a moment in life, not just for you, but for 20 other people. You got home safely while trying to do the work that you are so passionate about and having a family and keeping your own brand and research going, man. And you're the exact kind of person we want to be in communication with. And so thankful that you decided to come back and join us. Unfortunately, all four of us couldn't be here tonight, but it's been awesome catching up with you, dude. I really appreciate Absolutely. You making time.
No problem. Are we out of time?
I got a secret thing that I watch your videos, the presentation, the Luciferian, all the stuff on YouTube, like the Luciferian one and other ones. And I look at my wife and I go, there's no edits. He's just speaking the entire time. You know, you have the quick cuts like on YouTube. I'm like, he's doing it all in one take. Look at this. It's incredible. That's just somebody.
Well, you know, I've been off the radar for a year doing all kinds of stuff. I got a book coming out soon. I actually suspended all interviews until my book was done. You guys are the only interview I accepted. And because obviously I want to be able to talk about my book, but I've got a book coming out that I'm working hard to finish it, to publish it by the spring. A lot of people have been waiting a long time. If you're one of those people, it's coming. I promise. There's even people who've pre-ordered the book a long time ago. They're getting an extra copy of the book when it goes out. So I've been working hard on this book. I've already submitted 70,000 words, and that's you know only 2/3 of the book so far. 70,000 words for the edit. So that's going to be dropping soon in the spring, and everything that I've been doing over the last year, none of it has been publicized. So I've just been flying under the radar, doing all kinds of stuff. I've got big plans in the works, and just again, I've been off the radar, purposely off the radar for a year. So this kind of represents me coming back. You know, like I said, when you guys reached out to me, I had such a good time talking to you last time. I couldn't pass on this one.
Thank you. We were really worried about you, to be honest, because we were like, dude, you were speaking some heavy truth and like rewriting history with the last subject with the Nephilim that you talked about. We were like, dude, is he okay? Did they get him? Like we would bring it up like once a month on the show or through the chat. Like, did anybody hear from Tim?
I was trying to cyber stalk, and then when I see he would pop up, I'd be like, okay, you know, you are doing your thing. But anything we can do when you drop the book, I don't want you, if you want to stooge off the, you know, the subject now and it's going to be a big release, totally get it. But, you know, as much as we can use our platform to help promote that to the community that we all share, man, love to have you back to preview that.
I definitely come back to discuss the content. The book is it's vast in scope, and I really undertook in writing this book. It's my first book. I've written a lot of things in the past, articles and the scripts for films and so forth, but this is the actual first book that I've undertaken, and I'm self-publishing it, self-editing it. I've got a proofreader, but I'm self-editing the book, and really what I did was I got into this subject matter, a very focused subject matter. And I thought, I'm going to write a book about this particular subject. And it's, you know, it's going to be a medium sized book and it shouldn't take me too long. I thought maybe it'll take me 6 months. So I projected that, even did some pre-sales on that, thinking it's going to take me 6 months. But as soon as I got into this subject matter, it demanded that I deal with a dozen other topics in order for people to understand how all of these things tie together. And so I couldn't help myself. I just ended up having to go all the way back to the beginning and take it all the way to the end. And I just decided, screw it. A lot of people told me, break it up into 3 books, break it up into 2 books. And I just decided it's going to go, it's all going in one book. And I want people to have an understanding from the, when I say the beginning, I mean the beginning before the human species, all the way to the true apocalyptic scenario that's coming in the future. And it's not coronavirus.
Right.
So, you know, so it was a monumental undertaking. And that's why it's taken me so long. Every day, every single day I wake up and I write. That's what I'm doing when I'm not in Peru or something. So I've just been focused on that. But anyway, when it is done, when I do publish the book, I'd certainly like to come on and break down those topics. Dude. And I think you guys will find the content interesting.
Well, I say we do a whole special on it as a compendium to go along with it, man, of what you think is the most important takeaways from that. I think we'd be honored to have that on our platform for sure. And hopefully sell some big ass heavy books or ebooks if you guys are into that kind of reading, man. Stevie, go for it, man.
Well, I mean, I still think you shouldn't give up on the male modeling career. I think you should try to pursue that in 2020. So, but no, it's been a pleasure. I mean, like I said, you came on early in the kind of the inception when we didn't even know this was really going to be the Conspiracy Horseman show. You lent a great deal of credibility and you've always been very gracious to be on here. It's just incredible. We call it marking out in wrestling. Like when you're on with somebody you're a huge fan of and you kind of just realize like we consider ourselves to be kind of rough around the edges, right, Ben? Where nothing can really excite us because we're a little bit grizzled, but you're definitely one of the guests, if not the top guest that we have on that does excite us. So I definitely look forward to having you back and definitely with the book, and if we can support it anyway, that would be great.
Yeah, and there are some other things too that at some point once I determine exactly what I want to do with what we've discovered, I'll be talking about, for example, just as a little preview, in the course of that trip in Peru with this ground penetrating radar we were talking about, never ever has any technology like that ever been used in Peru and in most other places. And I actually, our team discovered beneath a pyramid, I won't say which, beneath a pyramid in Peru that was constructed by very enigmatic and ancient people, we discovered a massive artificial tunnel, which I had the intuition that there was a tunnel beneath this pyramid, and we weren't really allowed to fly our drone around there, but we did. I said, fly that drone around that pyramid because there's something underneath it. And when we did, we made a pretty dynamic discovery. I mean, it really just confirms the hypothesis that what you see on the surface is not the most interesting. When you talk about megaliths, when you talk about pyramids, what's on the surface is just that. It's just what's on the surface. It's what's underneath these monuments that is really mind-blowing. Mm. And we definitely confirmed that in Peru last year at this time.
Can I follow up with one last question?
Absolutely.
It's kind of a big picture. I know it's probably not an easy answer, Tim. But when in the world, or what in the world is going to happen to make the history books change? What you're saying is extremely exciting to any young person in school that would want to keep following that online or with whatever interactive textbooks or whatever is coming in there. It's so static and stale and quite frankly wrong what everybody's learning in school. Like, when's that actually going to change?
Who's the young Peruvian mafia, Don, that's going to be on our side for once?
There aren't any young Peruvian mafia, Don.
God damn it.
Bunch of old sleep bags. To answer your question, you know, that's a kind of a complicated question because let me ask you guys this question. How much time do we, is this interview pretty much over?
If you want to go more time, man, that's fine. We've been trying to just tighten up the show because we've been giving them a lot of shoe. But so if you want to go 15 more, man, I got no problem.
Sorry
with
to
that.
I've got plenty of time, but. That question just kind of it prompted something in my brain. But, you know, when you talk about changing the history books, you have to understand that, first of all, a lot of the history in the history books is accurate. You can have a pretty accurate understanding of post-diluvial history. When I say post-diluvial, what I mean is the history that has occurred up until the flood of Noah, up until the Noahic deluge. From the deluge beyond, it's that's where the real unknowns exist. That's where the real cover-up happens. And it's not even so much as of a cover-up as it is there's no place for it in academia right now.
Well, I just want to interject this because this is right in what you're talking about. We just did two shows ago, the Phantom Time Conspiracy from 700 moving to 1,000 on the calendar because church wanted, those rulers wanted to be there. And there's like faked documentation between that time period. I'm not sure if that's where you're talking about, you know, in them messing up timelines or not.
I'm talking about you have two ages of history. When you go around the world and you look at artifacts, when you look at megaliths compared to some of the other structures that were constructed on top of those megaliths or our additions to those older constructions, you're dealing with two distinct periods of time. You're dealing with the time before the cataclysm that wrecked the earth, and you're dealing with the time after that cataclysm. And when we talk about the time after that cataclysm, the post-diluvial age, that history is pretty well known. And there's not a whole lot of fudging going on in terms of what was actually happening with those early cultures and civilizations and so forth. That's pretty straightforward. There are some things there that are considered, you know, outside of the scope of archaeology and things like that. But for the most part, you know, if you learn the history, for example, of the ancient Near East from the scholars and from the historians and the archaeologists that have been working in that region, you're going to get more or less the general picture of what was going on. But as soon as you start dealing with the time before the cataclysm, these guys, they have no idea what they're looking at. They have no grid. They have no paradigm. They don't understand the pre-flood world. They can't even comprehend the dynamics that were at work in the pre-flood world because it's beyond their academic training. You get into mythology. You get into the kind of information that you have in the Bible, and in you know the stuff that the ancient Egyptians were talking about, the stuff that the Sumerians were talking about. And into these massive megalithic structures, which, of course, archaeologists want to say belong to these post-flood civilizations, that they were the ones who built the great pyramids. Not all pyramids, by the way, are pre-flood constructions. I would say most of them are post-flood constructions. But when you talk about the great pyramid, when you talk about the megalithic works, you're looking at a civilization that existed in the earth before the cataclysm, and knowledge of which was lost. And so because the knowledge was lost, and you're talking about thousands of years ago, there's very little evidence. The only evidence we really have are these massive constructions, the foundations of these massive constructions that were built with solid stone. And that's the only reason why they even exist. It's the only thing that made it through this cataclysm. And so they have no paradigm. So at that point, that's where their knowledge ends. And their speculation concerning the distant past is totally askew. So that's a long way to answer the question, in that a lot of history that we have today in our history books is Darwinian in nature. It comes from a Darwinian perspective. There's crossover from the theory of evolution, but you also have a Darwinian perspective of history. So in other words, that knowledge has been progressively accumulating. Civilization has been growing over time in terms of knowledge, in terms of technological development since the beginning, that it's this linear line of progression from, let's say, from the ancient Mesopotamians, from the ancient Egyptians all the way to modern man. And that is true to some degree. That's true in the post-flood context. But if you go backwards in time, you get to what I call the tombstone in the timeline of history, which is the cataclysm.
Mm-hmm.
When you get to the cataclysm, all bets are off. You cannot look at the pre-flood world in the same way that you look at the post-flood world. It doesn't work. The methods that the archaeologists use, even some of the scholars use to try and make determinations about cultures and civilizations and stuff. Once you get beyond the flood, you're into a new territory. You're into a completely different scenario, and these guys, they don't know how to process it. So is there a cover-up? Yes, but only at the very highest echelons. There is no cover-up in your local university among the archaeologists and Egyptologists and so forth. There's not a cover-up. There's a lot of misinformation, and there's a denial of the pre-flood world. There's a denial of what I call the Atlantean civilization that existed before the flood. They're just an abject denial. They don't even look at it. It's not in their grid. It's not in their paradigm. So if they're not even looking at it, if it's not in their paradigm, then they're not covering it up. It just doesn't exist. It's non-existent to them.
It's ignored more than it is anything else.
Right. So to think of it in terms of a cover-up and when are the history books going to change, I think the answer to that is never. I don't think that – I think really you'd have to find, for example, in terms of people to accept the existence of giants, you'd have to find an entire skeleton of a giant, and then you'd have to call in the guys from the universities, the archaeology departments, and they have to come in and take pictures and do testing and write peer-reviewed papers and all of that. And, you know, maybe that will happen someday, but I really doubt it.
Yeah. We're willing to go shake some people down at the Smithsonian, man. You don't got to go to Peru for this shit. You got some guys with hired muscle. Thinking,
why do we always got to go and committing assault against like scientists?
Because, dude, politicians. If Sal grabs a hold of somebody, you just got to get that intimidation. Their eyes are going to get real big, and then they'll tell you the truth or whatever, where the skulls are. They're down the hall in room 17B.
Yeah, the impulsive aggression of I love to see how it escalates.
I love to see when a guy laughs in Sal's face and says, "Get your hands off me, you sweaty fat fuck." Then what are we going to do?
Then.
Let me tell you this, though, I'll keep this really short. When I was in Peru recently, I was talking with an archaeologist. He's an archaeologist. He's not from Peru, but he works with the Peruvian Archaeological Institution. And he works in the mainstream in Peru, so he's works with all the big shots, all the archaeologists there, and all the people in the government apparatus. And this guy's not conspiratorial at all, But he happened to be on the project. He quit because it got too hot, as he says. He happened to be on the project that popped up some years ago. What was it, 3, 4, 5 years ago? I don't even remember now. Of that alien mummy in Peru. Do you remember that? It had like three fingers, and it looked like a mummified gray alien, basically. It had these spindly arms and fingers and so forth. And it was featured on Gaia TV, and it was like a big deal for a very short period of time. And everybody came out and said, "That's a hoax." In fact, I came out and said, "That's a hoax." It looked like an obvious hoax. It had all the hallmarks of a hoax. And I was absolutely convinced that that was just BS. And because of the players that got involved too. But what I didn't know was that those players only got involved at a certain point in the project. The project was actually in some very competent hands before it became publicized. Mm. I won't say who, but individuals in Peru who are explorers, very well-known explorers, very well-respected, who have connections to certain Masonic lodges in Europe. And these individuals were the ones to discover this mummy. In fact, they didn't discover it, they purchased it. And then they subsequently made some other discoveries of other mummies in a cave. And again, my archaeologist friend in Peru is telling me this. Because I told him I thought it was all BS and so forth. And he looked at me and he said, "Normally I would absolutely agree." This guy didn't want to talk about UFOs. This guy didn't want to talk about giants. He didn't want to be on camera. If we mentioned a UFO, if we mentioned a giant, didn't want to be on camera. That's how conservative he is. But he pulled me aside and he said, "Look, I got to tell you though, I was on that project, that mummy." He said, "We tested that mummy." We did DNA sampling. We sent it to, I think it was like 14 labs around the country, and they all came back non-human. And he said, it got so crazy that they had, according to him, according to this guy, this is here, this is coming from him, who supposedly worked directly on that project. And again, it's a very conservative archaeologist in Peru. He said, as soon as word started to get out about this mummy, they had representatives from the Russian intelligence coming to talk to them, representatives from the U.S. intelligence community coming to talk to them. They had all kinds of interest from these intelligence agencies, not just the Russians and the Americans, but other agencies also. The Peruvian government stepped in and shut it down. And only allowed to move forward after it was officially debunked. And then it was given into very incompetent hands purposely so that it would come out as this, you know, this obvious fraud and it would be debunked. So so what happened, what I learned, I didn't know this, found this out. And again, I thought the thing was 100% a hoax. I think I even said it on the radio, this thing's a hoax. And it appeared to me to be a hoax. And almost everything coming out of South America like that is a hoax. So that's my knee-jerk reaction, hoax. Yeah. I was very shocked to find out that it was in very competent hands in the beginning. And when things got hot, they let it go. They walked away. They dropped it and walked away. And including a couple of archaeologists who quit off of this project, they just dropped it, walked away. It was getting too hot. Intelligence agencies were coming in. Peruvian government wanted to shut it down. But because the information had already leaked, they spinned it. They had to spin it to They had to spin it to
kill its credibility. Disinformation campaign it was a real deal.
They had to put it into incompetent hands. They had to put it into the hands of individuals who are not reputable in the academic world, in the academic community, and they all agree. I was told that the Peruvian government and the United States, the individuals that came over from the United States from the CIA and different organizations, agreed to let it go forward as a hoax. It's a hoax. We're going to come out. We're going to publicly denounce it. And there's a lot of very interesting stories connected to that. So that was one of my shocks in Peru. Do I believe that mummy was authentic? I don't know. It having talked to my associate in Peru, my contact in Peru, who was on the project, and he proved to me, by the way, that he was on the project. Having talked to him, I went from abject denial. Complete denial. There's no way that this thing is real. To now, I don't know. I think it's. I think that thing might have been the real deal. And so that's the kind of weird stuff that goes on in the background. People need to understand that when real things are discovered, vested interests quickly descend. And rather than this is pretty much the MO today, rather than deep sixing what was found or destroying or whatever, it's much easier to discredit. And so those are the kind of operations that are happening now. So even if I find, let's say, a giant skeleton, take pictures of it, take video of it, take DNA, you know, rather than just deny it exists, it'll be spun as a hoax and my credibility will be destroyed.
Nancy Pelosi described that whole campaign as of what they do to, it doesn't matter if it's the real thing, as long as the fake story is put out there by a real news source as the slander, that's all that matters. It doesn't matter what the original argument was in the beginning. I want to know, what do you think?
I would say Nancy Pelosi is probably pretty good at doing that herself.
Yeah, well, she was. I say, what are the percentages that mummy is now in Scotland, sitting up in a Masonic chair with a kilt around it and an empty Jameson bottle while they dance around it someplace?
You know, when you talk about the Masons, when you talk about some of these societies, these fraternities, 90%, 95%, let's say, of all these guys out there who are involved in these lodges, they know nothing. This is just fraternal organizations. These guys get together. They have a good time. You know, they believe that they're involved in an organization that takes good men and makes them better. And in some ways it does. You know, I know I have some friends that were in the Masons that were in lodges here in Montana. And without a doubt, these are good guys. You start talking to them about, you know, Osiris and these things that are really at the heart of the Masonic mysteries. They don't know what you're talking about. They have no idea of who Albert Pike is, for example.
No,
they don't know who Manly P. Hall is. Believe me, I've been talking to him. They don't know who Manly P. Hall is. They don't know who Albert Pike is.
What do they call him? Blue
Lodge? They don't know what Luciferianism is.
I think they call them Blue Lodge members, like the guys who are your, you know, take grandma to the hospital on the bus.
Which are most of the guys. Yeah, exactly. And they're good guys for the most part. But they don't know anything about any of this. But this particular Masonic Lodge, though, that this guy was connected to, that particular Masonic Lodge is very high up. They're very high in the organization, and the guys that are part of that lodge are not your average Joes, you know, your blue-collar guys getting together and drinking beer at the lodge. These guys were, you know, these are the movers and shakers in business and politics involved in this particular lodge. And it wasn't in the United States, it was in Europe. And so, you know, you got to be able to differentiate. There's Masons, low-level Masons, even guys that are 32 degrees, even guys that are 33 degrees, they're still low-level Masons. They still don't know what the hell you're talking about. Mm-hmm. If you have any sense of the Masonic mysteries, which are, by the way, Phoenician mysteries. So if you have any sense of that and you try and communicate that with these guys, they don't know what you're talking about. They have no idea.
I was going to say, Tim, since that's so public about the 32nd, 33rd degree Masons, does that mean it's kind of like the UFO stuff where whatever is considered to be top secret, there's like 10 to 20 levels above that. So whatever level of degree of Mason, we're not going to really know about it. The 33rd is probably the bottom of the top in a way.
I don't even know what the degrees, I don't even know how much importance the degrees have. What I'm really learning by interacting with individuals who are Masons and were Masons, it's not so much even your degree. It's not your degree. It's which lodge you're a member of.
Oh.
And who you're associated with. And who knows how many degrees there are. I don't know. There's probably somebody out there who, some YouTube video or something about it, but that's what I've learned because, the guys, one of my friends in particular, I think he was 32. He was invited to be up into 33. He quit. But the reason why he quit was because the Masonic order, at least here in Montana, was getting very liberal, and which is kind of interesting, getting very liberal. So most Masons are very conservative, guys. Yeah, so when you talk about these secret societies, these fraternities, you got to understand that the mysteries, the real mysteries, and that's what they're called, the mysteries are not promulgated down the line to the lower levels at all. It's a very select club of people that are involved in the Luciferian aspect of Masonry that are knowingly involved in the Luciferian aspect of Masonry, and a good example of that is, you know, you can look at some of Leo Zagami's work, who's a friend of mine. He's a kind of a journalist, alternative news journalist in Italy. And Leo was pretty high up in the organizations, and he would concur with that. Most guys don't have any idea what the rituals mean and the symbols and so on and so forth.
I'm more shocked of the phrase liberal Montana. I just can't get liberal ass Montana. There's no way I'm going back to 17 bullets in my clip. There's no way you'll take that away from me. Like
liberal Montana. There's only a couple of places in Montana that are progressive in their politics. And that is that's the two cities, one of which I happen to be in, the two cities that have universities in them. So, the rest of Montana is gun-toting.
Yeah, it just seems like a hilarious oxymoron. After everything we discussed, you know, where we have actual, you know, credible mummy stuff, you know, I think way over our audience's head. They're enjoying it so much having you on here, Tim. But
we got a guy right now, by the way, over here in the hospital in Bozeman, Montana. We got a guy here that's checking for coronavirus.
Really?
Oh, wow. And they sent the samples over to Atlanta, to the CDC. You know what? Let me say one more thing about the coronavirus, because I realized I was about to say something and I got off track. I said that thousands of people left Wuhan before the coronavirus became a big deal. We all know that. Lots of people traveled out of Wuhan when the coronavirus was already infecting a lot of people in that region. So I think – and this, I don't think this is a – I wouldn't classify this as a conspiracy. I think that this is just a practical reality that may very likely be true. I think the coronavirus is already spreading all over the United States, but it's very weak here. I think it's manifesting as a I say weak in terms of in relationship to how it's affecting China. But I think it's already here. I think it's spreading like crazy. I think that, you know, my family's been down for 3 weeks. With it's not the flu.
Yeah,
it's like what they're describing is the coronavirus, but it's not critical. So I think it's already manifesting and sweeping across large populations here in the United States, and they just think they got a really severe flu, not flu, cold, you know, with some coughing, with some respiratory issues, and then a head cold and so forth, and it drags on for 3 weeks. And I found out today that the coronavirus looks like it's about a 3 week sickness illness. So, you know, I think maybe it's possible that it is already spreading everywhere, but only in Asia, only in China right now is it really deadly and manifesting as a critical illness. I think it's very possible. Again, I'm not trying to spread a conspiracy, and I don't think, you know, if that's the case, fine. Who cares, right?
I had it the last 3 weeks, the Wu-Tang flu. You don't, if you cough the wrong way, you'll be pissing out your ass. You don't know what the hell's going to hit you next, man. Like that, and you feel that dented tin can feeling, but it wasn't like bronchial and all that. So it was different. It very well could be.
Could be. And you know what? The CDC may know that, and they may say, why tell anybody? Why? I mean, it would just create panic, and it's not really...
One thing we found was Greek God Popdon, our co-host, he went and looked on his Clorox wipes. It wasn't anything somebody sent to him. His wife had just bought some new ones, and it says helps protect against human coronavirus on it. Now, to get all that marketing and packaging done and get it into the store to get it home before this shit hit, and then he went and looked at some old ones, didn't have that on the label at all. Mm. So you're talking about a bigger scandal. Conspiracy, big pharma, big manufacturing.
We'll never let a good crisis go to waste. Right. It's been trademarked.
I would think that if that's the case, if what I just said is true, and I don't know that it's true. I don't know. But if it's true, let's say that, you know, we're all looking at these 13 people who they quarantined, but in reality, that coronavirus is like the common cold now all over the United States. That would be really good news, actually. Because that would mean that it's just manifesting as a severe cold in the United States and not really, you know, having those devastating... we're not reacting as severely.
It's basically a second flu season in a way.
Yeah, exactly. So if that turns out to be the case, you know, let's say if my family's already had the coronavirus, I don't know. I doubt it. But let's say if we did, I'd actually feel pretty good about that. Look, I've had freaking malaria 5 times, yellow fever. I've had yellow fever 1 time. And severe cold is not the same as yellow fever. So let's just be thankful that this isn't malaria spreading across, if that's the case, you know, or yellow fever. Yellow fever is devastating. So there's a lot worse things out there. And anyway, I just kind of wanted to put a final note on that coronavirus. No,
absolutely, man. And obviously in the deepest jungles of Peru, you're going to get that. I expect you to have some new type of malaria every time we talk from now on, some some exotic disease, man.
Like a gift shop thing.
If you ever want to do some crazy shit with John McAfee, we can hook you up with him too. But it's Tim Alberino, you guys, and he's got a new book coming out. We can't wait to have him back there. You can follow him on Twitter, I think it's at the Tim Alberino, is that right?
Timothy Alberino at Timothy Alberino.
Yep, and timothyalberino.com, guys. Formerly a Gen 6 Productions. I mean, go on his YouTube and just watch more. This guy, it's a master's level education every time you get to see him speak. And we love your work, and thank you so much for granting us the time, man, after taking so much time off. We really appreciate you.
Well, I appreciate you guys inviting me back, and It's always fun. Like I say, it's always fun talking to you guys.
Yeah, man. Well, we look forward to getting your reaction to what happens with Cody and MJF on AEW tonight, Tim. It's going to be a big night for wrestling around here.
Yeah, I used to watch wrestling with my dad and my brother, but that was way back about 15 years ago.
I swear to God, if you say you grew up watching me, I'm going
to reach right through the you guys, it's the conspiracy. No,
it was back when Hulk Hogan was part of that NWO or whatever.
Yeah, that's when I was wrestling, Tim. Yeah. I wrestled for almost 30 years.
He was on there getting his ass kicked on that show. Man. But you never know where he's going to show up in the next Machete Wars, Infidels. It's Hacker Hameen. It's Big Stevie Cool. It's Tim Alberino. ProWrestlingTees.com/ all of our stores. HackerHameen.podbean.com. Twitch.tv/Conspiracy Horseman. We can't give you any more than that. YOLO. And three.